Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current event.
Salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again.
Today, we take a look at the undecided voter and the demographics that make up that group. Also on tap, the vice presidential debate, affirmative action, and much, much more. Without further ado, let's get started. Now, the undecided voters. The NBC Wall Street Journal breakdown suggests that they tend to be younger. 40% are about 34 years old or younger, moderate, and 54% identified themselves that way. Very pessimistic about the direction of the country. 64% say that we're on the wrong track, and more positive in their views of Obama. 45% positive than Romney, 20% positive. Now, Reuters seem to suggest that the undecided make up roughly 6% of the electorate, with a slightly higher concentration in an upward Midwest region. Now, this includes Ohio and Wisconsin, swing states that could determine the outcome of a close election. There's an article by Daniel Trotta says that even though such voters are expensive to win over and perhaps less likely to make it to the polls, they continue to capture the attention of campaigns and political analysts for their potential to tilt the results in a tight race. Now, after a long campaign season, the undecideds have also earned scorn from some pundits and humorists, incredulous that anyone could remain uncertain after months of campaign advertising and media coverage. Low information voters is one of the more polite names attached to this group. This year, at the debates, we should skip that thing where the undecided dial in their reaction to every little moment, remarked television host Bill Maher, and instead hook up that dial to their foreheads to see if there is an unmeasurable brain activity. I'd like to hear your opinion on this. To weigh in on the conversation, the number to call is 323 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and take calls from you. But before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, at this point in the election, are there really undecided voters? Or is this a ploy by the media to keep selling airtime when there is nearly $1 billion circulating through this campaign season?
Well, if there are any undecided voters, I'm not real sure what at this point in the game they would still be undecided about. I mean, either you want the country to continue growing in the path that is growing, on the path that is growing, or you don't. It's really that simple. Either you want education to be affordable, or you don't. Either you want those that receive federal assistance, either by way of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, student loans, Pell Grants, either you want those things to be available or you don't. It's really real simple. So, you know, I can't believe that the people who are quote-unquote undecided are undecided about an issue. I think they're undecided about a personality. I think they're undecided about a person's background. I think they're undecided, honestly, about a person's color. I really don't think they're undecided about anything legitimate. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's just what I believe. So
okay,
I can't
call
it any other way.
So let me tell you what Bill Maher said, and not just Bill Maher, but others are pretty critical of this so-called undecided voter. But I want you to take a listen at how Saturday Night Live framed the undecided voter. Take a listen to this, and I want to get you to respond.
This election will determine the future of our country, and this election will be determined by the undecided voter.
It seems that more than 96% of voters have already made up their minds about this election. Well, I guess some of us are just a little bit harder to please. We're not impressed by political spin or 30-second sound bites. Before you get our vote, you're going to have to answer some questions. Questions like,
when is the election? How soon do you have to decide?
What are the names of the two people running? And be specific.
Who is the president right now? Is he or she running? Because if so, experience is maybe something we should consider.
How long is the president's term of office? 1 year? 2 years? 3 years? A lot.
Just your life? Frankly, we're not comfortable with that. We don't need to be electing a dictator.
What happens if the president dies? Has anyone thought about who would replace him? What's your plan, gentlemen?
Can women vote? Because if not, as a woman, I've got a big problem with that. And by the way, if men can't vote, in my opinion, that's just as wrong.
We hear a lot about our dependence on foreign oil, but just what is oil? What is it used for? Can a woman have a baby? Just from French kissing? If you birth, spark, and leave at the same time, when you die, where's the power for?
We are America's undecided voters. There's still a lot we don't know.
And we want answers.
The Information Voters of America is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Okay, Jima, did Saturday Night Live get it right?
They really did get it right, because who are these people? And are they legit? I mean, do they have real legitimate concerns, or are they just over the top in everything that they think and everything that they do? And are they just not been or have not even been paying attention to what's going on and what's happening? So how can you still be undecided on October 14th, 2012? in terms of who you're going to vote for. This isn't a primary, you know, in terms of people from the same party having some of the same beliefs. This is two people from two totally different parties whose visions are totally different, whose plans and policies will impact us all very differently. So who do you stand with, and how do you not know that by now? I just don't understand. How do you not know that?
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I found it somewhat interesting that the polls shifted after the first presidential debate, even though the majority of the people fact-checking the debate said that Mitt Romney comments were misleading. Could this explain the presidential election? Could this presidential election really boil down to the few uninformed or low information voters? Is it really going to be boiling down to these people?
You know, anything is possible. I really don't think it's that many people that's not informed. And I think more people know what's happening in this election that the media gives credit for. You got to remember, and you kind of alluded to this in your opening statement in terms of the media and whether or not they're pushing all of these, you know, undecided people to keep their ratings up and to keep people interested. And I think that's exactly what they're doing. They're creating distractions long enough to increase their viewership. So one can be one up on the other and back and forth and all of that. So that's kind of what they're doing right now. So I think most people, like I stated, pretty much know who they're going to vote for. It's coming now down because of your debates. And we've spent more time, as you mentioned, talking about how the president looked and how Vice President Biden sounded as opposed to the substance of what the answers were. I mean, everything that Mitt Romney stated was fact-checked almost immediately, and an overwhelming majority of it was not accurate, to say it lightly and politely. He wasn't telling the truth. So how has the media spent more time talking about the president's asset and less time talking about the answers that Romney gave that were completely false, that were completely opposite of what he just said not even 2 years ago, but 6 months ago? I mean, he's changed positions on things all the way from where he was when he was running in the primary. And why is that not a major concern? I would be concerned about if I was an undecided voter still, that would concern me if I was an undecided voter.
So I guess what strikes me as a little odd is the fact that most of the targeting media-wise and a lot of the campaign dollars are spent in these quote-unquote battleground states, right? And so the reason is because there are clear lines when it comes to red states and blue states. You know, primarily California has been blue for a long time. It has 55 electoral votes. Texas has been red. And basically most of the southern states are pretty red states. So it begs the question in my mind is that these battleground states, are they the really most uninformed, uneducated electorate that we have in the United States? Because clearly these other states have locked in on who they think that represents them the best. But is these battleground states, quote unquote, that people are trying to persuade? What's going on in these battleground states that they're not deciding, especially a state like Ohio when President clearly bailed them out for the auto situation?
See, and that's what I'm maybe I'm missing it, because I don't think that they are that undecided. I believe Ohio's, if everybody wanted to make this to be about the economy, which is what they said it was going to be about, okay, so let's just make it about the economy. And in these so-called, quote-unquote, battleground states, you're looking at Ohio, you know, for example, whose unemployment rate is lower than the national average. I mean, and here's the thing about Ohio. Where the national average had peaked at 10%, Ohio's peaked at 11%. And yet Ohio's rate now is lower than the national rate, and it hit 7% before the national rate hit 7%. So do you really think the people in Ohio want to listen to Mitt Romney, who had already said to them, let them go bankrupt, and they are direct recipients of the stimulus money, they are direct recipients of the auto industry? Because we're not just talking about the cars that come from the plants. We're talking about the auxiliary services, the places that's building the batteries, the places that's building the floor mats. I mean, things happen in so many other little small businesses that those people are being affected and impacted by those decisions as well. And so for Ohioans to somewhat still be undecided, I don't know if that's a true or an accurate statement. I think it's a ploy. That's all I'm saying. I just think it's a ploy to keep us talking about it, to keep us looking and watching whose show going to talk about something and whose anchor is going to be talking the loudest and screaming the loudest. But they haven't really said anything different.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Even in their coverage.
Yeah. All right, it's time for a quick break. But when we return, we're going to shift to the vice presidential debate. And we want to hear from you. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Of course, we were talking about the undecided voters earlier, but I want to shift now to the vice presidential debate. Now, here's what the Washington Post had to say. If you live and breathe politics, this was a debate for the ages. From the jump, Biden and Ryan were at each other's throats. mixing it up in a way that neither President Obama nor Mitt Romney was willing to do last week. Biden's willingness to scoff at, laugh at, and generally express his disregard for Ryan and Republican policy in general are just what the Democratic base needed, wanted, after Obama's uninspiring performance last week. Ryan's unwillingness to back away from his proposals will make Republicans smile. So, Jima, let me ask you this. Who won the debate?
See, that's one of those questions where if you have to ask, you know, we know that Vice President Joe Biden handed Congressman Paul Ryan his lunch on a plate. He got handled. He got handled by the elder statesman. He got handled on all the issues and those little sound bites he was trying to throw out. Joe wasn't letting him get away with it, and Joe shouldn't have let him get away with it. The fact that Joe has been in Congress as long as he's been, he was able to give a perspective from a firsthand point of view. You know, sometimes it's good to hear from somebody that's been there. And that's what Joe was able to say. Joe was like, I was in those meetings, you know. So he was able to check, you know, the little young gun, the little young stunner that he thought he was, and had to go ahead and deflate some of his ego, because sometimes your little young cats think they know more than old heads, and sometimes the old heads got to come on, knock the box on them. You know, Joe was cool with it. Joe didn't, you know, didn't call him out his name or nothing, because he very well could have, you know, Joe. And Joe stayed above board, but he hit him where he needed to be hit, and then he was done. He dropped the mic and walked off the stage.
Okay, fair enough. I liken the debate to a heavyweight fight, and fight fans will know it is important to have a good referee to break up the clinching. I think Martha Raddatz did an outstanding job of allowing them to spar. When you contrast Martha's performance with Jen Lear's performance, how important do you think, Jima, is it to have a good moderator, especially for heavyweight debates like this?
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important, but I also think it's just as important for the people that's performing to be prepared to perform. So it doesn't do me any good to have great referees and a referee that'll stop a fight if my fighter don't even want to fight. See, my fighter still got to get in the ring and perform, because it's not up to the referee to make him want to fight. He got to want to fight. So yeah, Jim Lear kind of let it get away from him. That's no excuse for the lack of performance that the president gave. Still, but, you know, that was almost 2 weeks ago. I say we let that dog go and go to sleep, and we get ready for Tuesday for round two of this, because we're in the analogy of boxing. We get ready for round two with the president and Mitt Romney, and we see what happens.
All right.
A different format. I think it's going to fit the president a lot better, because we all know what happens when Mitt Romney is asked a question that he hasn't been prepared for.
Oh yeah. So that's a pretty fair analysis what you gave. But I want to hear from the right what they had to say about the debate. In particular, I want to hear what Hannity had to say about the debate. And I want to get you to respond. Take a listen.
Here's what I want to say about the debate. You know what, as I think about this more and more, as I watch a rude, condescending, interruptive, mean-spirited vice president tonight, this is not going to play well. I'll tell you right now, and already two polls show that Ryan won this debate. I think to be laughing when 23 million Americans are out of work and 49 million Americans are on food stamps and 1 in 6 Americans are in poverty and Iran is a real threat to world security, I don't think it's funny, Juan.
You know what? I think when you see someone distorting facts, when you see someone who is going off without the facts.
The vice president.
No, I'm talking about Representative Ryan. And then he sits there and he says, you know what? This is absurd. What did he call it? Malarkey. That's what he was laughing at.
Okay. So I want to ask a two-part question. First, what do you think about Hannity's comment on the vice president being condescending? And then I want to ask you about the malarkey statement the vice president did. What do you make of it?
Well, I would say, what did Hannity say the week before about the tone and tenor of Mitt Romney? They thought he showed leadership, right? So how is it that the same attitude, which I don't feel, in my opinion, that Joe Biden in any shape, form or fashion mirrored anything that Mitt Romney did the week before. But, you know, so if the same type of tone was used the week before and it shows strength and leadership, and then Vice President Joe Biden uses the same tactic, but now it's condescending. So is it condescending because your person got their butt whooped? Because it wasn't condescending the week before. The week before, you were a cheerleader and dancing up on top of the ceiling saying, okay, we're going to win the election. So that's why I can't listen to the Sean Hannitys of the world. I don't mind you being rooting for your team. But when you root for your team, you also got to be realistic about the players on your team. I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan, right? Diehard. But I also know that as a team, they have a lot of issues right now. They don't know how to win at the end. They don't know how to close out a game. They're missing some parts. Quarterback can be shaky at times. So why would I, after a loss of today, want to go and talk about what Baltimore didn't do or what Baltimore did, as opposed to talking about what my team did or didn't do? See, I can be objective about my team, although I still love them. Now, can't nobody else talk about the Cowboys, but I can talk about the Cowboys. So when you're talking about your candidate, and which is why I could sit and say I was not pleased with the president's performance, but then when did this become about performance? When did debates become about the superficial? When did it get to that point? And did it get to this point now because Mitt Romney doesn't have anything else to stand on, so now it's not about anything of substance? Because I don't recall, and maybe I missed it 4 years ago, I don't think I did, but I don't recall when we were in the debates with the president and John McCain that we were talking about who looked irritated. I'm not sure. I mean, John McCain always looked that way, so that wasn't anything new. I don't recall any previous debates with an incumbent president going against his challenger, us spending so much time talking about the superficial. So I have to wonder, why are we spending so much time on it now, and is it just because their guy doesn't have any substance? We've said this a million times. He's the dressed-up mannequin in the window that looks very good, but the mannequin can't move unless somebody moves him, right? So, you know, that's who Mitt Romney is to me. He's the mannequin in the window. Dresses up well, can put a suit on. But after that, you can't have a conversation with Mitt Romney in the window because conversation requires exchange. You might can talk too, but you're not having a conversation.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to go to the phone lines real quick. Hello, caller, last four, 3732. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Mr. Motivator.
Hey, Mr. Motivator, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. You know this is my favorite broadcast. I always enjoy tuning in and listening to you guys.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. You got a question or comment?
Well, my question is, I noticed the word performance was mentioned. And during the presidential debates, it looked as though everyone was impressed with Romney making a performance. As my sister said, rather than giving us some substance to stand on. And do you think this is going to cause the election to be a very close election, since so many people really want a performance instead of wanting to hear the truth? How do you feel about that?
You know, that's a very great question. Not too long ago, we had this issue where Snooki was going to speak at a college university, and they were denying this renowned scholar, or they was paying her in a different rate. And they kind of say that Snooki is a performer. So we have this performance-type culture these days where people are going after that type of imagery as opposed to somebody with substance. Here we are again having someone like a Mitt Romney that had the style on stage at the performing at the debate, and he did, in fact, perform because – you know, a performer or actor, as my son would say, gets into character. And characters, in a lot of cases, lies or represent themselves that are not in a true sense. So, in a sense, Romney did exactly that. He was in character or acting or performing. And so I would tend to agree with we could be in a situation where it could cost us the presidential election, because remember, I opened the show with this notion of undecided voters. And the skit that we played about SNL, these people are really not informed. So they're making their decisions based on performing. As one would say, as the cliche goes, they're making their decisions based on style and not substance. Jimmy, you say what?
Agree with that. And I think the other thing is that what we have to do as the voters that are educated is we have to also inform the uninformed. We have to be in the places where we think people may not be getting a full picture. But I think, and we talk about this, you know, all the time too, is that when you look back, going back to Ohio, you know, the whole reason why there had been so many attempts to suppress people's right to vote was so that the election could have a different ending. But because the majority of those laws have been struck down and going through appeal processes, they are now, because they've already started voting in Ohio, they've already started early voting, and early voting has always been a friend of the Democratic Party, which is why the Republican Party wanted to suppress it. They wanted to delay it. They wanted to deny it. They wanted to discourage it. And so you see the billboards up in areas of where the population looks more like us, in African American communities and Latino communities, with mixed messages about when early voting starts. And so just unabashedly putting it out there that they don't want people to vote, or that they want to confuse people about voting. And so I say vote early, as soon as you can go. And then you don't have to worry about whether or not, you know, there's going to be some issue on the night of the election, because enough people will have already voted to went on ahead and put them over the top. That's what I'm pushing for. And so we do have groups of people that are going to be stuck on performance. But are they a serious voter anyway? Are they really concerned about issues? When you have a CEO of a company who sends out a memo to his employees telling them that if the president gets reelected, he's going to close up all of his businesses, he's going to go and retire, which means all those people are not going to have jobs, what does that tell you about that person? It's nothing to do with the president, because the president isn't the CEO of the company. He is. When you have a man who took his life and his children's life because he felt like the president was going to get reelected, that's something wrong with that person. That is nothing. That has nothing to do with the president. And so what we've got to make sure that we do is that we're keeping things in the compartments in which they belong. And so as great as it is to have a great, you know, a person that looks good and sounds good, I want somebody that is good. I want somebody that has a heart for the job that they're in. And so, because when you have a heart and you love what you do it with passion. You do it effortlessly. You spend the time, your waking moments, concerned about the well-being of someone else. That's what you look for. And I have not been able to find that heart in Mitt Romney. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. But even when he talked about it as if it was detached from who he is. When you deeply care, it shows in everything that you do. And so when we're trying to determine whether or not it's going to have an impact on the outcome, then we have to be the voice in the wilderness standing at the top saying, let's go vote early. Not let's wait on election. Let's go on and vote now, so that for those people that can't go and vote early, we'll be available to go take them to vote on voting day. So how do we ensure that the election isn't stolen? We fight. We don't get, you know, the experience in the wilderness had a lot to do with them not being ready to go and cross over. So how do we make sure we're going to be ready to cross over is that we keep everybody informed.
Yeah, good point. So, Mr. Motivator, did we answer your question?
Yes, you did. And you always do a great job, and I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, sir, for your call. So, Jim, I want to go back to some points you made. And primarily, you mentioned two things. One, you mentioned doing things with heart, concern. And then you also mentioned this issue about voting and the fact that they have socialized early on about voting and about getting people to really be not necessarily they were misinforming the people about the law. They were saying you need a voter ID. Right. And this went on for many days. So now people are confused. They have these signs out there that says show ID when the law doesn't really require you to do that. And they went on this campaign to tell everybody here's what you're going to need. But they haven't gone on the same campaign to tell people, oh, it didn't happen. And most people still believe that you need an ID to vote in these states. So I want to talk about what Jesse Jackson says. He says it's not just voter suppression, it's really more or less voter intimidation and voter frustration. What do you think about that?
I agree with that because at the end of the day, you know, there's so many people who, some people just don't know how the political process works. Some people have been involved in politics just since the name Barack Obama was first introduced in 2007. And so this is really their first real engagement in this process. And so they really didn't know how things work. It's just like there's a pocket of people that still think that the president can make a law, and he can't. You know, he has to go through the channels to make that happen. And so while because of that, you have people that are just now truly understanding what this is all about. And so they're far behind. They have a lot of ground to make up, and we don't have a lot of time to get all of it made up. So we have to give it to them in chunks in which they can understand. So when Reverend Jackson says, you know, people are frustrated, he's right, because we are frustrated, and we're frustrated because how do you not know how all of this works? Where were you in civics class when this was being discussed? I'm not saying you have to be Johnny on the spot and be able to answer all the questions about everything, but you at least need to have some sort of working knowledge about what makes it work. And when you don't know is when you get frustrated. It's for the child that can't read.
Yeah.
His frustration comes because the words aren't making any sense to him. The words aren't making any sense to him. Put a layer back. Because he can't read. So we deal with he's frustrated, and we deal with the frustration instead of dealing with the fact that he can't read.
Right.
So we've got to pull back the layer of the frustration of the voter, of the American people, and pull that back again and say, well, what is it that you're really frustrated about?
Right.
Why are you angry?
Yeah. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to go to another caller. Caller last four, 7102. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is the Esquire Abby Self. This new birth said it's been a long time.
Hey, Abby, welcome to the show.
Thank you, my darling. And hey, Jimmy, what's been going on, my sister?
Woo-hoo, Abby,
been missing you, Abby. We have been missing you. Where you been? Where you been, girl?
Girl, let me tell you. I'll answer the question. Fighting the battle of faith here in the city of Detroit. Let me tell you what's going on. Let's give you the lowdown. I guess you all probably know from the headlines. Chief Godsey, who was the head of the police department, got caught up in a three-way sex scandal. He had to be replaced. We're still in fighting in court with the emergency manager, which November 6th, Public Act 4, constitutes the fact that the people say no to emergency managers in the city of Detroit, cities all around the state of Michigan, as well as the school district. So I've been fighting with that, trying to get the teachers back into the school. We started off the school year 275 teachers short in the district, then I'll be doggone. They have laid them all off in the summer, had to make sure everybody got placed, and we're still suffering, I say, at least another 25 teachers short in the district. So I've been having my hands busy, but guys, you guys have been keeping it rolling, I see.
Woo, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're so glad to have you back on the show, Abby. Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
So
where do we start?
So we're talking about
I've been talking to a lot of my colleagues, even some of the parents, where I can catch them 5 minutes after they drop the children off. If I'm looking to catch them in that 5 minute span, I can talk to them. I said, what is it about the whole election process that you don't like? You'd be surprised at things that people would say. First thing that was a common statement was that my vote doesn't count anyway because they're going to elect who they want to, and then when they get elected, they're going to do what somebody else tells them to do, and that, you know, whatever I do, it doesn't make a difference because he doesn't care anything about me. So it's a lot of, as Gina, I was listening to her saying the scenario about the child that can't read, they don't understand the power of the democratic process. And that, you know, you have a vote. Your voice is your vote. Your vote is your voice. And if whether or not you're alto, soprano, tenor, bass, you at least have some degree of composition and ability to blend your voice and harmonize what this government should be like. Because the government is supposed to be for the people, by the people, on behalf of the people. Next thing we have been doing in the city of Detroit, especially when it came up to this, because everybody wants Roy Roberts gone, like Michael Jackson said in the song, they want him to beat it. We've been holding some voters education classes and some democratic, I guess you could call it due democratic process training to get them to understand, you know, the compliancy of certain laws, certain amendments, what constitutions are, and, you know, what public acts are, and how they differentiate from the base level degree of legislation that they're accustomed to or may not even understood. So I think through this process, every city, every community needs to do that to educate people because, like Gina was saying, you can't do any better sometimes, especially if you're not really acclimated to a certain degree of knowledge. You can't do any better if you don't know any better. If somebody doesn't break it down in layman terms, you know, how are you going to be able to grasp the process and be an intricate part of it? So we've been working that out. It seems to be working pretty good. We got a lot of people, you know, from my understanding, from Neighborhood City Hall, that came in and registered to vote who have not voted since, like, the latter part of the 90s. So I think they know that the criticality of this election is real, real crucial, not only to the American dream, but to the fact that we don't want to go back into slavery because we all know how Romney is rolling. He wants to take people, black people, back 50 years ago when we were fighting against Jim Crow and all of these, the unorthodox practices. Nobody wants to go back to that. This man is for America. They're right. But he's for multi-billion-dollar corporate America, not the common night working man and woman.
All right, then. Let me continue the conversation about something here, Jim. I wanted to switch back to the vice presidential debate. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what struck me as odd in this debate. Was that when Mitt Romney handled the moderator and spewed tons of misleading information, he was seen by the media outlets as taking charge. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier too, Gina, but when Joe Biden did it this way, it was too harsh. Can you imagine if the president would have taken the same approach that Vice President Biden would have done? What would be the Gina, if that would have been the case?
Well, that was the challenge because they had already tried to link the video footage from, what was that, 1990-something, I can't remember, it was 2000 or something, when he was doing the speech at Hampton University, and they was trying to loop that to be he was an angry black man. So he had to come in and try to balance that out and you know, dispel the fear of the angry black man. So he had to come off probably aloof to some, cold to others, and despondent to even a whole nother set of people, depending on which word you want to use. So he was already challenged by that because that was already a carrot that was dangling in front of America because Fox News put it out there for it to be dangled, and then the other media outlets just don't know how to think for themselves and put it out there to dangle it as well. So he was already challenged in that area. So we know what would have happened. He would have come out being labeled as he's an angry, not just an angry president, he would have been an angry black man. That's what would have come out. Nothing less than that. And so he already had to battle that. And so that's why, you know, I'm not making excuses for him, you know, because they're going to label you one way or another anyway.
Right.
You just got to figure out how much energy you want to put into that.
Well, let me go to the Motor City Maharani. What did you think about the vice presidential debate?
You know, some people said that he tried to portray Kennedy. He was being himself. I really appreciate the down-to-earthness of Joe Biden. You know, he's very flexible, very versatile. And, you know, Paul Ryan made a fool of himself, looking like little Eddie Munster in spite of himself. And, you know, the thing with Mitt Romney, you know what? President Obama, like Jima said, he played it cool and smooth. He was cool hand Barack that day, because the first thing that the media, the anti-black media, wanted to do was label him as an angry black man, a villain. You know how they label black men anywhere, especially when they have a certain degree of echelon. They want to denigrate their character. He was smooth, and he allowed Mitt Romney, in my interpretation, to hang himself, because when you don't have the facts, you got to fight with fiction and try to sling mud. And that's what Romney did, in my opinion. A lot of people said that, you know, Barack Obama should have been a little bit more aggressive. But you know what? He played it right. But just watch. This next time around, he's going to be ready, Freddie, and he's going to chop Mitt Romney's head off. And you know what his real name is? Willard.
That's right.
How many remember that movie Willard? Willard Romney. Count him up.
That's right. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. It's time for another break. But before we do that, I want to take a minute to talk about who I have in the studio here today. I have three prominent guests in the studio today. I have Lois in here with Let's Talk Truth, which her show airs every Tuesday at 7:30. I also have Misfit Pro, which shows airs every Wednesday at 6 p.m. And then I also have Mr. Motivator, who you heard early on, and his shows airs on Saturday. So take a moment to go out there and listen to their shows. They really have some good stuff out there. In fact, throughout the week, I get the motivation from Mr. Motivator, and I also get my fitness tip from Ms. Fit Pro, and then, of course, I could not go a week without listening to Let's Talk Truth. So I encourage you to go out there. We're going to take a break, and we're going to return here shortly. When we do, we're going to talk about this other very important story that's in the news, affirmative action. If you haven't heard, affirmative action is on the chopping block. I'm going to talk about what's going on with the Supreme Court, as well as the case that was brought up in the University of Texas, right here in the good old state of Texas. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Point friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Pennsylvania's longest-serving U.S. Senator Arlen Specter is dead at 82. As Scott Detrow of member station WYTF in Harrisburg reports, the Republican-turned-Democrat spent his career carving out a spot as a moderate willing to buck his own party.
Specter spent the bulk of his long career as a Republican, but he began and ended as a Democrat. He was frequently at odds with the Republican Party, opposing Robert Bork's Supreme Court candidacy and supporting abortion rights. Specter often joked he'd do better as a Democrat.
Governor Rendell made the suggestion to me. Said if I became a Democrat, he'd help me raise money. I told him if I became a Democrat, I wouldn't have to raise any money.
But that's not how it turned out. When Specter ultimately rejoined the Democratic Party, he lost a tough 2010 primary to Congressman Joe Sestak. In his Senate farewell address, Specter blasted both parties for becoming too ideologically driven. For NPR News, I'm Scott Detrow.
President Obama and Mitt Romney are taking a break from the campaign trail today. They're busy prepping ahead of Tuesday night's second presidential debate. Mr. Obama is meeting with his advisors in Williamsburg, Virginia. Speaking to ABC's This Week, GOP Senator Rob Portman says he expects the president to be much more energetic Tuesday night after a lackluster performance during the last debate.
I think President Obama is going to come out swinging. I think he's going to have to compensate for a poor first debate.
Romney is hoping to repeat his strong showing. The Romney camp is meeting this weekend at his home in Boston. Egypt's President Mohamed Morsi backed off an attempt to oust the general prosecutor who many Egyptians criticize for failing to convict top officials from the former regime. The reversal comes after a two-day standoff. As NPR's Leila Fadel reports, the judiciary's win shows it to be a powerful check on Morsi's authority.
Over the weekend, Egypt's president took back a decision to remove the general prosecutor from his position after the acquittal of regime officials that angered many Egyptians. But the general prosecutor refused to go, and the powerful judges' club threw its support behind him. Faced with a judicial revolt on his hands, Morsi took back the decree. The judiciary accused him of overstepping his executive powers. With no parliament, Morsi is both the executive and legislative authority in Egypt. Morsi's decision to remove the prosecutor was welcomed by frustrated Egyptians, angry that the judicial authorities have largely failed to convict top officials from the former regime. The reversal of that decision may be unpopular, but indicates that the judiciary may be the last check on Morsi's authority. Leila Fadel, NPR News, Cairo.
12 people are dead after gunmen armed with rifles and machetes attacked a rural village in northern Nigeria. The attacks began around dawn with as many as 50 gunmen surrounding a small village in Dogon Dawa. This is NPR News. The families of people killed on September 11th have been invited to military installations in four states to watch pre-trial hearings for five men charged with planning or assisting the terrorist attacks. Relatives and attack survivors who register in advance can watch on closed-circuit televisions. The hearings are set to begin Monday in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The Federal Reserve has many critics in the United States, but as Steve Beckner of Market News International reports from Tokyo, Chairman Ben Bernanke is also having to defend the Fed abroad.
By holding short-term interest rates near zero for almost 4 years and pushing long-term rates down through massive bond buying, the Fed has flooded the world with money seeking higher rates of return. This has raised hackles in countries like Brazil, which try to hold down their currency's value to boost exports. To keep Fed-generated capital inflows from driving up their currencies, those developing countries buy dollars, which expands their money supplies and raises prices. But Bernanke, speaking at a Bank of Japan International Monetary Fund event, contends Fed policies are helping all countries, not just the U.S. economy, and says complaining nations would be better off if they had more flexible exchange rates. For NPR News, I'm Steve Beckner in Tokyo.
Social Security recipients shouldn't expect a big increase in monthly benefits come January. Early numbers show the pay raise will be between 1 and 2%, which will be among the lowest since automatic adjustments were adopted in 1975. The raise will be made official on Tuesday when the government releases inflation figures for September. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I want to shift the conversation a little bit about to a disturbing topic, I would call it, and it's about affirmative action. And I don't know if you've heard this or not, but pay close attention to what's going on, because really affirmative action is really on the chopping block. Now, here's an article that was written a couple of days ago, and it says, with the future of affirmative action in higher education hanging in the balance, the Supreme Court on Wednesday grappled with two basic questions repeated by Chief Justice Roberts in various forms at least a dozen times. He wanted to know how much diversity was enough, and he wanted to know when colleges would be able to achieve an acceptable level of diversity without using racial preferences. What is the critical mass of African Americans and Hispanic at the university that you are working towards? Chief Justice Roberts asked a lawyer at the University of Texas at Austin. The Chief Justice never received a specific answer from the university's lawyer or from one representing the federal government. Their reluctance to answer illuminated a tension in the court's precedents, which reject quotas about allowing public universities to use race in admission decisions as but one unquantifiable factor among many. Had the lawyers responded to the Chief Justice by proposing a percentage goal, they would have run headlong into cases prohibiting quotas. In failing to offer a number, though, they left the court with very little to do in the face of precedents, requiring judges to look closely whenever the government draws distinction among people based on race. You won't tell me what the critical mass is, Chief Justice Roberts told the university's lawyer, Gregory Garr. How am I supposed to do the job that our president says I should do? Now, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who retired in 2006, attended the argument and listened attentively as her former colleagues debated whether to reaffirm, limit, or overturn one of her legacies. Her majority opinion in Grutter versus Bullinger, the 5-4 decision in 2003 that allowed public universities to take account of race as a part of a holistic view. Her replacement by Justice Samuel Alito Jr., who has been hostile to affirmative action programs, may have altered the balance on the court on whether such admissions program are constitutional. Najima, I want to play something by Bill Maher, and I want to get you to respond, because I think this is really, really important here, the debate we're having on affirmative. Take a listen, and let me get you to respond.
Let me change the subject completely, because the Supreme Court is going to rule on something, which I think you have a personal stake in, because you went to the University of Texas.
I did, right.
Did?
Yeah.
They actually have a law degree down there in Texas.
They give them away, right.
No, I'm kidding.
Texas has many great schools.
I mean, the university.
They grade everything.
Houston, medical school. Okay. But a white girl got rejected there by the University of Texas, and she's a little pissed off about it. And it looks like the conservatives on the Supreme Court may have picked this case as a way to end affirmative action. And, of course, this is always interesting because Clarence Thomas gets to vote on it, a guy who obviously got points on the affirmative action scale for his job and who has to vote now against that concept. But the University of Texas has what they call a 10% policy, which means if you are in the top 10% of your high school graduating class, you get automatically to go to the state school. By the way, California also has that here. But California here, we do explicitly prohibits putting race into the mix.
Right.
You cannot do it, which is why everyone at UCLA is Asian. It's only by test scores. So it's funny because the people who think that they're stacking a deck for their son Trevor, the lacrosse player, they're really doing it for Sindhu, the sitar playing Indian kid, and women. I mean, we are going to actually need affirmative action for men at college because they cannot keep up. If you go by the trend, and I know you don't like trends, but that's where the trend is going.
So, Jima, with all of this hoopla around affirmative action, are we trying to get rid of affirmative action and using school as a platform to do so?
Short answer to that is yes. We are trying to get rid of affirmative action because they're trying to insinuate that people have been allowed access to an area that they were not qualified to be in. And that's always been the argument that those against affirmative action will come out and say that less than qualified people are giving access to something. And those of us who have been on the receiving end of affirmative action know good and doggone well that we have been more than qualified. And so let's say that you use just my race to get me in the door. That doesn't keep me in the door. I still have to do the work. And that's the part of the argument that gets silent that we don't talk about is the admissions is the one thing. The graduation is something totally different. If you were to take the statistics, and Reverend Jackson talks about this often, you take a look at the number of people that get into college and by race or by gender, and you look at the number of people that actually graduate, because graduate means you were able to maintain and stay there through that time period and do the work and then graduate. Those numbers are going to be different. You're not going to start out with the same number and end with the same number. So it doesn't. So let's say I got in because I was black and I was a female. I still have to do the work to stay in, and I still have to do the work to graduate. And the only reason why you used my race or my gender to let me in was because of all of the practices that you practiced throughout the years to keep me out.
Right.
See, affirmative action was never put in place because we didn't have nothing else to do. There was a reason why somebody fought. There was a reason why separate but equal was fought. You know, if separate but equal worked, no one, Thurgood Marshall wouldn't need to go and defend it in front of the Supreme Court. But it wasn't working. So it wasn't working. It was never separate and equal. It was always separate and unequal. And therein was the problem. So when you're talking about these federal things, federal laws that have had to be made by the Supreme Court to level and equal out the playing field, it had to happen because it was not equal before that. So when you and you throw all of them in, you throw voting in, you throw civil rights in, you throw education in, you throw now, you know, whether or not, you know, where we go and work, the reason why those criteria had to be instituted was because if no one made states or companies do certain things, some of them wouldn't do it. And that's a true statement. Some of them would not hire if they didn't have to. I don't know if you've ever been in the room where you're the only one in the room. And see, I meet several I meet a couple of them. They can knock a female off of me and black. So they met their quota just with me in the room. So when you're the only one in the room, and you having to defend yourself every single day for being qualified to be in the room, because everybody else around the table automatically assumes that you got in because of your race or your gender, so you already got to come in fighting. So I'm not buying the fact that we don't need it anymore. We still need it, And we've got to figure out how to make sure we protect it, because more of us have benefited from it than not. And those that have benefited from it have forgotten that they must have forgot they was qualified all along. See, the reason why the Negro League was so important was because the Major League didn't want to invite us. So we created our own. But then all of a sudden we started beating them. So then they wanted us in the majors. See, the playing field was, it was level then. It wasn't that we couldn't compete. We could always compete. But you didn't want to play against us. But then you got to say, well, wait now. If we put Jackie on the team, we might win some more games. So let's see which one can come and be the Jackie Robinson.
That's right.
Same scenario. But we forget history. We forget how important and why things happened. We look at the reaction and we look at what's happening right now when we fail to pull the layer back and ask the next question.
Great point. Is the Motor City Maharani still with us? It looks like she may be on mute, but I want to kind of continue the conversation a little bit more about affirmative action. But I want to ask you this, Jima. You brought out a lot of great points, right? But I want to talk a little bit about this affirmative action is, in my opinion, it's synonymous with this privilege entrance into Harvard or Yale. You mentioned something that was really important, and the fact of the matter is that when someone gets in the system, it's incumbent upon that individual to get out of it, to graduate. Getting in is one thing, graduating is something altogether different. But it's no different, affirmative action that is that when your father or you, the president of the United States, or you have some privilege, did you get into Harvard or Yale? Isn't that the same?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but that's what a well-informed person and a well-read person would make the connection to. Just like it's no different than welfare and subsidy. See, when you give it to the oil man, it's a subsidy.
That's right.
To help Exxon Mobil and to help Chevron, but when you give it to a poor person, it's welfare. It's the same thing. It's something from the government. But when the government gives it to me, then I'm lazy and shiftless. But when it gives it to, a company, then it's to help the company create jobs that we're still waiting for them to create.
That's
so
right.
So it's the same thing. So, yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
So let me argue the other side. Let me play devil's advocate here for a minute. The suggestion right now is to remove affirmative action or the clause out of the system to get admitted to a university. The argument will be going forward, and people will hear more about this next week, in which Bill Maher so eloquently stated, is that it's working in California right now. They remove race out of the admission process. Texas has a great program right now where they say top 10% is automatically admitted. That means that if you're in a predominantly African-American neighborhood and you go into a system that's predominantly attended by African-Americans, if you graduate in top percent, you get automatic admission because you're in the top 10%. Same thing with the Latino community. So the argument going forward is because our systems are already segregated and because you still have the 10% policy in Texas, shouldn't this be enough? Why do we need to add this an additional African-American or Latino or affirmative action clause when you already have it embedded into the system? Jima, you say what?
Well, here's what I say, and to go with your point, and this is just strictly from the world according to Jima. I don't have any facts about this or nothing. I'm just making this up as I go along. I do know that the young lady who has initiated this case, she was not in the top 10%. She was in top 12. So if she had to study a little bit harder, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Let's just keep that 100. So she was in full control of getting into the University of Texas, her lifelong dream, had she just worked a little bit harder and been in the top 10%, right? So don't she have some responsibility in this too?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, I'm just making sure about that. Now, the second part of your question, if all things were equal, and since we know that they're not, then you're right, we wouldn't have a need for it. what other things could we use in our systems? We have to first fix the system. Maybe California did some other things before it got to this point, before it made the changes that it has obviously made and that, quote, unquote, seems to be working. So, you know, we have to be careful that, because if it starts here at the University of Texas and then it's going, I mean, you already got a company saying who they will or won't hire. As I mentioned earlier, you got the man already talking about he's going to close all his business if the president get reelected. I mean, what is that all about? So there has to be, what are the safeguards? I guess that would be my question. What are the safeguards that's going to be put in place to protect people from being disenfranchised? That would be my question.
Great point. So let me bring up my second point. The argument that they're posing, really, and the judges or lawyers or people that are in that type of profession know how to really use words to their advantage. That's the one unique thing about being a lawyer and or attorney, is that you know how to formulate an argument. And in this particular instance, this is what I want people to pay really close attention to. Right, in this particular instance, Chief Justice Roberts is asking, why won't you tell me the definition of critical mass? He's trying to get the university to tell them, give them a specific percentage or a specific number, because the language in the original decision was primarily about meeting critical mass. But I would argue, is it the same language in the separate but equal argument when it was said to institute this with all deliberate speed, right? What is all deliberate speed? That language has not been challenged before, and nor will it ever be challenged, because it was the language that an attorney could use to make it happen without making it happen. So the language is vague in an intentional sense, because you cannot define what all deliberate speed means. In a similar situation, which we are in now, they're trying to say critical mass, right? When you have met critical mass, or when you can meet critical mass, or when you cannot meet critical mass, then you tell me we don't need it anymore. So that's why they cannot define critical mass. So my question, Eugenia, is this laying the groundwork for precedence, right? Meaning that if you are able to prove that you don't need affirmative action in colleges and universities, which is supposed to be a liberal institution, then we can make this same argument moving forward with institutions, companies, banks, loans, everything when it comes to affirmative action. Is this setting precedent for affirmative action across the board?
I believe so. It has the potential to dismantle what was set in place for a reason, which was to level the playing field. So it does have the potential for that, and it has the potential, if not now, later, when another, if Romney becomes president and he gets to appoint two additional judges that would be more conservative, then you can best believe that it will be gone away with, not only on institutional level, but probably across the board and in everything. So it would definitely take us back in time. So it definitely has the potential for that, and that's what makes it so scary. For me, that's what makes it so scary, is because of the potential.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to go to the phone lines right now. Caller, last 43732. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Well, this is Lois with Let's Talk Truth. I want to say that I, across the board, agree with the host and the co-host and what they've been saying about the affirmative action. And my question initially is, why did we have affirmative action in the first place? Because nothing was equal. And I'm not just afraid, but I get angry
when I look at how we have been put down and put back for so many years because we are not smart enough. Listen, it doesn't matter how smart we get as a race of people. The more I learn, the more you're going to come up with to stop me from going forth. There have been so many tests put in place. We've got to throw a test here, a test there, because we have to keep black people in their places. We're not allowed to show our educational background or to the knowledge that we've gained. We have to just stay mediocre, and that is so out of line. I am so very sorry, but anyone who says that we have to move affirmative action, if we didn't have affirmative action, we would never get in. And I would like to know who said that everything was working fine in California. Who's measuring that? Who are they comparing it to? And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are not allowed to get into different universities because you didn't come up in the 10%. Sometimes we have been in the first 5% and we haven't been able to go there. So, yes, they're trying to stop the progress of the African-American any way they can. And it is so sad if we don't see that and do something about it.
All right. Great point, Lois. So let me take those in a couple of different ways. Let's talk about affirmative action first, right? The term affirmative action was first used in the United States in Executive Order 10925, for those that you are keeping track. And it was signed by President John F. Kennedy on March 6, 1961. It was used to promote actions that achieve non-discrimination. Now, in 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson enacted Executive Order 11246, which required government employees to take affirmative action to hire without regard to race, religion, and national origin. Now, in 1968, gender was added to the anti-discrimination list. Comparable procedures in other countries are known as reservation in India, positive discrimination in UK, and employment in Canada. But at any rate, it is really an act that was created based on all the things that we were discriminated early on in the history of the United States. So as Jima pointed out earlier, if there was no need for it, it wouldn't be in place. So why is it that the need so happened to change all of a sudden? A, because we have a black president. But for the most part, people are arguing that we don't need it anymore. And so I like to use the analogy that Bill Maher did on his show to kind of continue on with his theme, is the fact that he said that, how is it that you have a race and all of the Caucasians or Anglo-Saxons took off running? And then three quarters after the race is complete, he says, okay, now black people, you can now go. Right, and then once they're going, just because you have one that was faster than everybody else, and this is what Kerry Washington pointed out, is that now you think just because that one person was able to kind of somewhat catch up that you don't need it for everybody else. The fact of the matter is we still need this type of legislation because the playing field is not equal, and it probably won't be equal for at least another 4, 5, 6, 10 generations. So to take the second point, Lois, you talked about was the fact that California, what's the measure or what's the data that says that is working in California? Right now, they're using statistics of enrollment. They're saying before it was instituted, the affirmative action was taken out of the university system, the enrollment for African Americans and minorities were 10-12%. Now it has doubled or tripled since they've taken it away. So I mentioned this term earlier about precedence, right? They're using now California as the model for precedence to say that, hey, we have an example that works, so therefore we should take it down everywhere else. And it's plainly simple because they're using this term, can you quantify what is enough? If you can't tell me what is enough, then one is enough. And so therefore is no need to have it. And that is the argument that is being put forward. Lois, thank you for your call. That was an absolutely wonderful statement and question. So I want to now shift to the second part of my question about affirmative action, Jima, and this is primarily about the fact that let me do it in this fashion. I'm going to play a clip by Bill Maher, and I want to talk a little bit about something you mentioned early on about being black and female. And I want you to hear Kerry's argument And then we're going to talk a little bit about it. Take a listen.
Just really fascinated constantly by the idea, and just this is in conversation. You know, I'm not challenging the way our government works in this area, but in conversation, it's fascinating to me. Whenever I look a white male in the eye who tells me that my life no longer is filled with challenges based on who I am as a woman, based on who I am as a person of color, it's ludicrous to me.
Well, that's certainly not what anyone here has said, and I don't know.
No, I'm not putting that on you, but definitely part of the discussion.
Well, just to be clear, so the Supreme Court, as you suggested, is going to hear that case this coming week, mm-hmm. and what you described is not what they're debating. They're not debating whether or not affirmative action should be compensation for years of past racial discrimination. What they're debating is whether or not affirmative action is a useful tool to accomplish the goal of diversity. That's it, diversity.
Right, but the desire to have diversity at a university level comes from a desire to change the fact that the people who had access to education in this country were only a certain class of people, only a certain race of people for a very long time. So the commitment to diversity came from a desire to be more inclusive and fair so that we acknowledge the fact that not everybody starts out on an even scale. Not everybody starts out with the same benefits and access and abilities to achieve. And so we do something about that in a country where we want everybody to have a shot at success.
So, Jima, really, the affirmative action is being framed in two different ways, right? On the one hand, affirmative action is being framed as making up for lost time. You treated black people, let's be honest, so poorly for many, many, many years, let's create legislation so we can kind of help be level the playing field. It's not equitable, meaning you're going to make up for all that lost time, but we are going to put in legislation in place so that you can potentially have a springboard, right? That's one way of shaping the argument. The other way is really about diversity. Have affirmative action done its job to create a diverse place, whether that be a diverse workplace, would that be a diverse college institution? Would that be diversity in how we do business every day? So those are the two sides of the argument. If we pose the argument strictly about diversity, we lose. But if we frame the argument about making up for lost time, we win, because we will always win their argument at the end of the day. What do you think?
You're right. I think at the end of the day, you know, going with what Kerry Washington was saying, we want all people to have access to, and because we wasn't a nation that started out that way, because we were built on principles that that excluded, it didn't include, and so they lasted for a very long time, and because of that, that's the reason why that laws had to be changed and amendments had to be made to this great document we call the Constitution, because so many things were left out. So I shouldn't even say things. Let me correct myself. So many people were left out of that, and so you're right. You know, if all things were equal, and we know that they're not, when all things are equal, you do get diversity. That's the answer. When all things are equal, there's not just one of any kind sitting around the table. Because you've taken the time to look over the applicants based on what's on their application, even before you see them, you'll make a determination whether or not they're qualified. Because they haven't hired people. If you're not even qualified, I don't care what color you are. I'm not going to waste any time talking to you. I don't care what gender you are. If you don't meet the basic qualifications, you don't even get an invite. So if we know that when we're all represented, productivity is higher in companies that have a diverse workforce. Schools produce greater levels of research and science and things of that nature when there's a diverse group of people looking at it. So we all do better when things are diverse, and when the playing field is even, it is diverse. And that's what we have to remember, is that when the playing field is even, it is diverse.
You know, and that's interesting because we frame the diversity in a lot of instances just by race. But there are other things that make a diverse workforce, religion, sexual orientation, gender, and even age, especially age, because in the workplace today, there are primarily three generations of workers. You have the baby boomers, but you also have Generation X and Y in the workplace today because boomers are staying longer because of the economic situation we're in. And X's and Y's can't move up or move around because of the fact that boomers are still there and Y's or millennials can't really kind of seamlessly integrate themselves into the workforce. So you potentially have a 3 to 4 generational diverse nature of the workplace. So when we use this term diversity, we can't no longer think of it as just race, right? I mentioned religion, especially with all the different people coming in from all over the world coming to the United States. And you mentioned in our colleges and universities, it helps out with diversity of thought because I now bring a different perspective. So it'd be interesting to see how the affirmative action debate formulates over the next few days or so, because if they use the argument about diversity, it should be an all-inclusive definition of diversity, not just race. And if we use the argument about it being making up for lost time, well, we win that argument hand over foot every time. So it's time for a quick break. But when we return, I want to talk a little bit about President Obama. This article that was written about President Obama called Barack X. You won't believe it. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jamal. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to talk a little bit about this article that was written by Jelana Cobb, and it's called Barack X. Now, quite nasty when I heard it at first. I had mixed feelings about the title of the article because there's always negative connotations associated with anything X, right? But of course, as I began to read and study who Malcolm Little was, if those who don't understand Malcolm X's name was Malcolm Little, and don't understand the fact that there was not really any negativity associated with the Nation of Islam and the things that Malcolm did. But until I was an informed person, I thought it was a negative association with the name X. So quite naturally, I thought the same thing when I saw this article about Barack X. So I began to read the article, and then I said, ah, this is a positive notion of the president as Barack X. So let me take a moment to read a little bit of the article, and I would encourage you to go out to the New Yorker to read the full article, but because there's a lot of sustenance, there's a lot of meat in this article. And again, it reads, it's mid-March in Harlem, and the streets are an improvised urban bazaar. Young men hawk umbrellas, vintage vinyl, and knit caps. The aromas of curry and fried plantains waft out from Caribbean spot. And just ahead of me is a teenager so slight that I scarcely notice him at first. There's a perfectly calibrated swagger in his stride. He's swaddled in an oversized black leather jacket. His jeans cinch 5 inches below the waist. His footwear immaculate. I've nearly passed him before I notice something that makes me pause for a second and then snap a picture from my cell phone. Stitched onto the back of the jacket in dimensions broader than his back is the seal of the President of the United States. He is standing on Malcolm X Boulevard, and a generation ago that a jacket would have been embolized with a defiant X in homage to a man who defined radical black descent. There are a dozen questions I could ask him. Whether there are metal detectors in his school, or when was the last time he was frisked by the NYPD, whether he sees his future as an amorphous blob of curtailed possibilities, or if he has real plans. But I don't have to ask him how the most revered symbol of the American establishment came to adorn his jacket. Now, of course, I would say President Obama has a profound impact on me, just like this young man. And in fact, when I'm pretty sure this strikes a chord in a lot of African-American male young men, to be exact, is that 5-10 years ago, it would be hard to fathom that you would walk around with that seal with pride. And I know Michelle Obama got a lot of flack about saying that during the last election. But the reality is that that is the case. And so for Mr. Cobb to actually see this national seal on the back of this young man's black, not President Obama, not the fact that he had anything about Obama 2012. He had the United States presidential seal on his back. I think that speaks volumes about where we've come as a nation and the impact that President Obama has had on a lot of different people. So, Jim, I want to talk to you a little bit about first the optics, right? Now, you can't underestimate the impact of African-American psyche, especially young ones, to see a black man in that position. It also shows how prevalent racism is in the United States. If the president of the United States can be subjected to it, then me and my little everyday job would be dealing with it as well. So my question to you is, how do you think this impact African-American in general, but specifically young men and women?
Well, I think the impact is as diverse as we are as a race of people. I mean, the issue is that we're not all the same. We don't all experience things the same way. And I think the election of President Obama shows that, because you still have a large majority of people who are not, you know, that concerned about, you know, they really want race to no longer be a factor. And they want to say the 85 or, you know, 90% of those people that were black that voted for the president only voted for him because he was black. And yet, you know, forgetting the fact that there really had never been another one that had been nominated by the party. So what are they holding? I mean, you can't really hold that to be a real standard because you don't know that. You know, you're making it up. And so I think of the president's election, you know, and serving in the White House has been somewhat of an inspiration. His story has been an inspiration. Him and his wife and how they raise their children and how they go about tackling some of the issues of the world, it should be inspiring to us all because, you know, he has very, very, very thick skin. I would say it has to be that of the elephant that got the thickest tusk. I would say that would be the president because they have hurled at him about everything they could possibly give him. And he comes out, you know, and handles the business of the nation. So yes, he's been inspiring. And to each of us, it would be a different reason why.
I definitely have to agree with you on that. And so the connection I made from the article, him entitling Barack X, and the fact that, you know, is the association with Malcolm X is primarily the associating with the power that Malcolm X had over so many black people, right? And I remember the scene in Spike Lee's movie when he moved his hand and the comment was made, that's too much power for one black man. And so the president really has that kind of impact on so many different people because we all know if you can ascend to the highest office in the land through all of the negativity, through all of the racism, you know, he, as a president of the United States, being asked for his papers, you know, with all of the things he has to go through, we can all in our very core understand and relate to that. So the association of that to me was profound because of that connection. What do you think about that connection?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think because, and this even goes back to when we were talking earlier about the whole thing with affirmative action, when you're the only one in the room, you carry so much on you because you're the only one in the room and you have so much to prove. And so you don't get the luxury of being the angry black man or the angry black woman. You know, when a woman stands up for herself and is able to speak for herself, you know, she gets all these other labels. When a man does it, he's confident. When a woman does it, she's, you know, cocky and conceited and overbearing and all these things. So you have to manage and balance all of that and still be true to yourself. And the only way you can do that is that you have to know yourself. And so the fact that the president, as I stated before, has been able to take all the things that have been yielded at him and maintain, you know, his composure speaks volumes to the type of man that he is. And so it can show, you know, we can all learn something. Those of us that have been in positions of leadership can all learn something from the president's leadership style. And I pray that when he's done being president of the United States, that he writes a leadership book that I think a lot of us could really learn some things from because it has been so powerful watching him and watching how he manages it all. I think we could all learn something from that.
You know, that's interesting because that was going to be the next question I was going to ask you. And I was going to ask you that because recently you were a featured presenter at the National Conference of Blacks in Criminal Justice. Just a week ago, you were part of Oprah's Life class, which is known for all the leadership topics she has. And you've also been around a lot of prominent people like Al Sharpton and a couple of others. And so since you are our resident leadership expert, how does the president hold up when it comes to leadership? You know, give me a couple of core competencies that you believe that will extend throughout our lifetime because of his leadership.
Well, I think what the president has shown is that you must be well informed. You have to show levels of patience. You have to be firm, and you have to be consistent. And if he's been anything, he's been consistent. And some people don't like consistency because consistency breeds responsibility. And so he does that. And when you talk about, you know, leadership, you know at the end of the day the buck stops with you and it starts with you. And so when it all is well, you praise. When all goes to hell in the basket, you know, you put out on the porch somewhere. So you have to know that going in that position, that it's not going to always, you know, be applause of appreciation. And so the thing he's also shown, in my opinion, is that when you know what you have been called to do, it does not matter what they say about you. You do what you know you've been called to do. So I am in a position of authority, of power on my job, not because I was hired, but because this is what I'm supposed to do right now. And when you know that you're more than just a title, then you can embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly a whole lot differently, because you know the sun doesn't rise or set based on your title, and you know that you've been called for this time, for this purpose, to do whatever it is you're doing right now. And so it's when we forget, it's when we don't understand, it's when we try to walk in somebody else's calling that we become disgruntled and we're not at the top of our game. See, the president can't be anybody but President Barack Obama. He can't be President Kennedy. He can't be President Clinton. He can't be President Carter. He can't be President Lincoln. He has to be President Obama. And all what that means, that's who he has to be, and that's who he is. And although they want to attach different people to him, when history is written about him, he will stand on his own merit, and that's what you want to be able to do. You want to be able to stand on your own, and that's what he's been able to do, and that's what he's shown us how to do.
And I may add, he has done it very well. You know, me and even in my role and throughout my profession, you know, I take my cues from the president because, you know, he has his coolness under pressure. You know, and there are times when he needs to take it there. For the most part, he thinks it through, as you mentioned earlier. He doesn't make these irrational statements or comments just off the cuff. He really thinks it through, and he considers others when he's making his decision. Unlike Mitt Romney, in my opinion, considers the data, not the people. And so that's the clear distinction that I think we will be making here in the next 24 days or so. Is when it's time to make this decision, and it takes me back to my original comment about the undecided voter. Here we are, a little bit over 3 weeks away, and we still have people that consider themselves undecided when there's clearly delineation between tax policy, healthcare policy, domestic policy, foreign policy, and the fact that the president has been consistent on these issues. And now here you have no position that you can definitively say that Mitt Romney stands on because he changes his position. So it's indicative to me as a decided voter that if I choose a Mitt Romney, then I don't know what I'm getting. But if I choose a Barack Obama, I do know what I'm getting. As a decided voter, I understand that if I don't vote, I am voting for Mitt Romney. And so for these undecided voters out there, whoever you may be, if you are undecided at this point in time, you really are making a vote for Mitt Romney, in my opinion. So, Jim, we're getting ready to move to the last segment on the show. I want to ask you one final question about the president. With the affirmative action taking place here over the next few days or so, and the fact that the president has been challenged on race on many occasions since he's been in office, disrespect pretty much primarily every other month, something is disrespectful, someone is showing disrespect to him. Do you think in the second term, if he is fortunate to get, or when he's reelected, will he begin to revisit the conversation on race?
Well, on the short answer is yes, because he'll have to, because it's not going anywhere. I mean, that race and people with racist views are not going anywhere. So eventually, yes, he's going to have another conversation. The issue is, I'm hoping that it's not attached to anything. I think it'll serve a greater purpose if they those on the opposite side won't be able to attach it to an event or to a circumstance, but just to a time of healing or something. You know, if something happens, it's not a Trayvon Martin issue. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to attach it. I just want to be able to have a conversation and to get us to start dialoguing about the things that make us different are also the things that we work well together. So I think you'll have to have the conversation. And I don't necessarily know if I need a conversation as much as I need a more direct approach to some policies, some practices, or some things along that nature. We've got to have the conversation, and I'll just kind of ease into my final thoughts here. We've got to have the conversation about gun violence because we cannot continue to play like it doesn't exist. And that's from either side. I don't understand how the NRA has so much power. There's more people in the world than the NRA, and how is it they have crippled us to such a point that we won't even talk about gun control? That's unbelievable. And so maybe he'll have to have a conversation, because we have to know the vast number of people being killed or injured daily by gun violence is people of color. So we've got to talk about that. So, and we've got to put something in place to help combat that. So, yes, I'm pretty sure he will, because he won't have a choice, because those of us that were silent during the first term are not going to be silent during the second term. And he'll only have 2 years to get done whatever we want to get done, because after that he'll be considered a lame duck president. So we've got to work hard at strategizing our agenda. You know, we talk a lot about the gay and lesbian community and about the Latino community, but they took full advantage of the opportunity. They didn't wait to see if he got a second term. They had one thing on their mind, and, you know, for Latinos it was citizenship. For gay and lesbian community it was equality. Black community want to be upset about something, but we haven't figured out what that one thing is. And until we figure it out, You know, we've got to figure that out, and we've got to come out of the gate come November 7th, we've got to come out with what the agenda should be, and, you know, what is it we're going to want him to do in his second term.
I have to agree with you. All right, final thoughts.
Well, it's interesting because we always talk and hear about, you know, that black people voted for the president because he was black. But I don't know if you saw the T-shirt of the guy at the Mitt Romney rally yesterday who had on a T-shirt, and on the back of it said, "Let's put white back in the White House." Now, so it's okay for white people to vote because he's white, but it's not okay for black people to vote for the president because he's black. It's just a double standard, you know, and yet those are the things that happen every day that we're not supposed to talk about. As the caller was saying earlier, we're not supposed to talk about. We're not supposed to have thoughts about it or feelings about, you know, how these things are playing out. But that we have to call it as it is, and then we've got to deal with it as it is. So, you know, that just needs to be – I just had to say that because – it's almost like it's a bad thing. I remember when Jesse Jackson Jr. was running for office the very first time, and he was on a Chris Rock show, and he kept saying, you know, he kept saying that the naysayers was like, you know, you're running off your daddy's name, and you know, like that was a bad thing, you know. And he said he got to thinking about it, like, well, my daddy got a good name, you know. Why can't I run off my daddy's name when his daddy's name, you know, when you look at George Bush ran off his daddy's name, so why can't I run off my daddy's name? And so those are the double standards of the world that you know we have to take a look at. And so, I mean, even now, when you look at the fact that the people that they want to say get ready for the next cycle of elections before we get out of this one has some connection to somebody in the past. So what makes it, you know, all better for one set of people, but not for us all. And I think America would be greater served if we spent a lot of more time bridging the gaps as opposed to expanding the gaps. The gaps have expanded educationally. The gaps have expanded wealth-wise. The gaps have expanded in terms of people incarcerated. I mean, we've expanded the gaps on so many areas. It's time we get back now to trying to close those gaps. And you need the right person in office to do that. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of it not just being from a presidential level, but you need the right people in office in your local city government, on your student, you know, for your city councils and your school boards and the mayors of your cities, because these people make decisions every day that have a direct impact on your life right now where you sit. And so we've got to think about that, and we've got to do a much better job of being informed. We've got to do a much better job of seeking out and not always waiting for someone to give us the information, but go and find it. We're in a technology world right now. Anything you want to know is at your fingertips, literally. And if you don't have access at home, the libraries are always available, and they're free. You might have a time limit, but you can still go over there and find out the information. So we got to stop coming up with excuses, and we've got to be bold. That's the thing I stated last week when I was talking about what I got from the life class with Pastor Joel Osteen, and that was that we have to pray boldly and be bold, speak bold about what we want and what we desire and who we are and what we stand for, because we're coming up on a time now where anything goes. And so you've got to have something solid that you're standing on, or you're going to be like that tree limb out there blowing in the wind. And I don't want to blow in the wind. I want to be at the bottom of the tree. See, everybody want to be all at the top and be seen. I want to be at the bottom of the tree because that's the foundation. I want to be solid. I want to have something that's keeping me in place, because those leaves fall off. And although they come back, they still go away. I want to be that root that's holding it all together. And so in order to do that, I've got to stand firm, and I've got to know who I am, and I've got to know whose I am. So as we come up on Tuesday's debate, I hope that everybody watches it. I think it's going to be to the president's favor, because it is a town hall setting, and he does well in those types of settings because he knows how to connect with people. I hope Mitt Romney has been practicing on how to talk to people and not at people or over people or around people, because he doesn't know how to do that very well, I don't think. And so I hope that, you know, because I want it to be a good debate. I don't want it to be lopsided. I want people to really hear substance and not look at the optics of it all. And then if you can early vote in your state, please go ahead and early vote and get it on out of the way. I am ready for the time where I'd be able to vote early here in the state of Texas, because I will be there with bells on, getting it out of the way so that I can, as I stated last week, be a servant to those that may not have the opportunity to vote early, so that I can take somebody to the polls on November 6th. So if you can vote early, please do pay attention to what's happening all over the world, and do your own research for yourself. Don't rely on somebody else to tell you. Find out for yourself and then begin to ask questions. We're going into the second semester, second 6 weeks of school. You should be having some parent-teacher conferences coming up. I know ours is tomorrow with my son's teacher. I will be there to ask a few questions. If you're not clear about your child's schedule or what they're supposed to be doing, this is the time that you can go and do that. So please be involved in your child's life. Be involved in what's going on with them in their school, and do not be afraid to ask their teachers questions, because they're supposed to provide you with information. So, you know, after all is said and done, I just say take care of ourselves. We're going into the holiday season here where we don't always eat what we should. So let's start early practicing good habits of portion control and maybe walking a little bit more than sitting. And so I know I've said a whole lot, I've covered a whole lot of territories, but somebody out there needed to hear everything I just said, and I hope and pray that it fell on fertile ground today.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to Mr. Motivator, Lois with Let's Talk Truth, and Misfit Pro. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't thank my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJima. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. And don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.